Now, I don't know if many of you know this, but the School of Urban Planning is a relatively small but very powerful unit within the Faculty of Engineering. And a gift of the type that has been made by the Gurwitzes to the school has an exceptional impact on such a small group. It makes so much more possible that otherwise would not occur. So if you let me do a bit of advertising in front of you, many of you who are our students right now and ultimately who will be our graduates in the near future, please learn from this experience. First of all, I'd say be inspired by what they have done themselves. Get involved here at McGill University. Get involved in our surrounding community and stay involved over the long term. And very much think of us as your home and your family long term in the future, and give back and make many things possible for future generations as well. So I'll just wrap up to say that I really want to express my sincere thanks both to Sam and Brenda, one for being here tonight and two for making all this very, very possible. And I really look forward to their continued collaboration and support in the Faculty of Engineering and particularly our School of Urban Planning. I know there's not much that I can give you to recognize you for the value that you've given to us, but I'll just ask you to accept a very small token of our appreciation here, and I just ask all of you to acknowledge the great contribution that they've made to us. Thank you. And back to you.
Thank you, Dean Nysel, for these words. Thank you for coming over. I know you can't stay, but it was very nice to have you here. So, my name is Raphael Fischler. I'm the director of the School of Urban Planning. Bonsoir à tous, de nouveau. Mes remerciements aussi. Thank you very much, Sam and Brenda, for your generosity. Thank you to our speaker for coming and braving a snowstorm. Maybe I shouldn't thank you yet, but I'm sure it was a whole ordeal to just get here. So thank you very much. It's a great honor to have our speaker tonight, one of the leading architects from Europe for the last half century. Before I introduce him, let me say a few words about the reasons for this lecture. I must say that there is a personal reason also. I studied architecture in the Netherlands at the other polytechnic, not the one where Mr. Herberg went. I went to Eindhoven. And I've wanted for a long time to invite here one of the architects who really inspired my fellow students and I when we were students, some of the buildings that we found most inspiring. For me, personally, I must say that it's a great privilege to meet with a person whom I consider to be a humanist among architects, who places people first and uses buildings as means to humanistic ends. At another level, at an institutional level, the theme that we have chosen for this lecture in which we asked Mr. Herzberger to deal with is, as you can see from the title, the school as a city and the city as a school. This theme was chosen for two main reasons. One, we know since the 1960s that with people such as Jane Jacobs, of course, we know very well in Canada, We've started to learn that cities are not artifacts, that they are living systems, that they are dynamic systems, constantly evolving, systems in which people seek to meet their own needs, realize their dreams. And they are learning systems also. They are places that collectively learn over time, and in which people can learn things, learn how to improve their lives. Well before we had the slogan of the creative city, which is now really a marketing slogan in many ways, we had people, and Mr. Herzberger was one of them, who told us that really building cities was about enabling people to develop their full potential. Now, acting on some of these ideas, McGill University has embarked in an ambitious project together with the École de Technologie Supérieure to develop a quartier de l'innovation, an innovation district in Griffintown, where ATS is located. And it's an experiment in trying to foster innovation, not just in the more technical scientific realms where ATS and some of McGill are very strong. It's also an attempt to try and innovate in the social, cultural, artistic, and urbanistic realms. And to develop not just a loose framework and policies, but to actually do very concrete projects. And one of these projects, which is really in its infancy, in its very beginning stages, and may not happen, but we hope will happen, is to build a new school in Griffintown for the growing population. And to build a new school that would be experimental, innovative, and would bring two languages together, various levels of study, and would be something different. A place where, if it is possible to imagine that, the school boards would experiment and innovate and try new things. And that is a place that would require innovative thinking in the curriculum, but also in the design, in the architecture. So to make a long story short, we thought it would be a great idea in this context to invite a person who has received international recognition for his designs for school buildings, university buildings, but beyond that, for his architecture that puts people and children at the center of their life. It's an architecture that promotes use, meaning, developed by the occupants themselves. And it is a real honor to have Mr. Herzberger here for that. Herman Herzberger is a native son of Amsterdam. He's a graduate, as I said, of TH, of Technische Universiteit Delft. He founded his architectural practice, Architecture Studio Herman Herzberger, in 1960. And he has had a bit of time since then to build an incredible portfolio of public buildings, mostly cultural, institutional, educational buildings in the Netherlands and other countries. Mr. Herzberger has taught. He's been a lecturer at the Academy of Architecture in Amsterdam. He's been a professor at Delft himself for many years, and then the chairman of the postgraduate Berlage Institute of Urbanism, Urban Design and Architecture. He's written extensively, and one of the books that he published is called Space and Learning. So you can see it's a very important theme in his work. In 2012, all this extraordinary work was recognized by the Royal Institute of British Architects with the gold medal, the RIBA gold medal, which is, if not the highest honor, certainly one of the highest honors for lifetime achievement in architecture. And let me quote a paragraph from the RIBA citation that he received. I'm quoting now. What Herman Herzberger wants is an architecture that can be interpreted and used by the inhabitants in many ways. He's an advocate of the open society in which encounters are not planned but occur in a spontaneous, natural manner. His architecture facilitates such a use. For him, architecture is not only a social activity, but should also stimulate the user into finding his or her place in society. It has to give meaning, and it has to be able to receive meaning. Herzberger's architecture always has a strong didactic component. This can also be said for his writings. His architecture contains lessons that have nothing to do with representation or image making, but that have much to do with the way people live together. Now, fostering the emergence of an open society, enabling people to interact in spontaneous ways, helping them to create meaning, and helping them to learn, these are ideals that are worthy of emulation by all planners and designers. So, Mr. Herzberger, we're extremely grateful to you for being here tonight, for bringing your experience and your wisdom to us. I'm sorry, this is a faux pas that should not happen. So, may I please ask you to switch off your cell phones? Ladies and gentlemen, let me repeat, thank you very much, Mr. Herzberger, for coming. Let us give Mr. Herzberger a warm welcome.
Thank you for this introduction. But there's a problem in something you said. You said experimenting with children, you can't experiment with living people. This is the problem, you know, that you cannot, you would like to experiment, but you can't experiment. In fact, as an architect or an urbanist, you can have ideas, but it's the educators that have to follow you. And in fact, what you are saying touches the heart of the whole problem. Children are always, I'm afraid I have to say, subject of ideas about education, you know, and ideas about the world. And in the traditional school, children are just, I can't find the right word. Huh? No, there is no right word. Are just sculpted into what the culture wants them to do. For some reason, and I must say I cannot say it's a stupid reason, but it's a strange reason, the dominance of the education in primary schools in Holland, and also in secondary schools in Holland, and I have to be sure, not only in Holland, is on mathematics and language. And the idea is that when you learn mathematics and you learn language, you're successful. Successful. I mean, I love to be successful, but that's not the only thing in life. In fact, painful enough, schools are frustrating people. This is the traditional image of a school. And I'm afraid it is still valuable in many places in the world. There's a man in front of the crowd with a blackboard, something like this. I love blackboards, by the way. He's explaining how the world works. And these people are supposed to get that in their heads, you know. You see how successful they are. This man is not, the blackboard is there. This man thinks he will get it from heaven. This man, he must be in the world much more successful than this one, because he finds it here, you know. And he, I'm sorry to say, he will be a loser. And this is a little bit, you know, and the windows, now I'm an architect, I'm not an educator, but you see the windows are high enough so that you cannot look out, because you are not supposed to look out. When you are looking out, you know, you are not concentrated on the blackboard. I could, in some way or another, summarize my story by showing you this picture, which for me is the new education. And you don't need to experiment on people, because before you experiment on them, they are already experimenting on you. The only contribution I made was some steps. And on these steps, they find a place where they learn about the world. And this this picture, in my opinion, is sort of summarizing the idea, I think, valuable for our future. Also, this man is looking here, but they're all finding out about the world, they're exploring, and we have this fantastic means. I mean, we are in a situation where you can, you know, the smallest children, I mean, you know that story of a baby, one and a half year old baby who got a book in hands and was going to do this, you know. We are in a condition that we can find all that stuff which is in the world ourselves and quicker than the teacher, because every generation is better in it. It's painful to say, but in our office, it's especially the trainees who do the work, because they're just faster, you know, because they know, you know, when you are the next generation, you know how to handle this. I am absolutely stupid with these things. I know that I have to push here, but that's all I know about computers. Anyway, the new condition is that we have all the possibilities and that we have to learn the people to do it themselves, which in fact is the story of Maria Montessori, and I cannot hide and I don't want to hide that I am a product of Montessori. This is not my fault, but it's my mother who sent me to the Montessori school. And in fact, I gradually more find out that my architecture is also based on that idea. Make the conditions that the people can do it themselves. So what we as architects or urbanists try to do is make conditions in such a way that people can find their own way in the world. And so we started to open up the classrooms, to make with the new technical means just sliding or harmonica doors. And you have still the classroom, but you have also the outside space where you can work. And the idea of all listening to one person, like here, I mean, this is a very old-fashioned situation. And this will die out. I'm afraid? I'm very happy that they can talk for you and that you're still listening. And I hope I can keep you listening. But this is not the situation, not the condition of the modern school. The condition of the modern school is that people work on themselves and that the teacher, if there is any teacher, is just, when they get stuck to say, well, why don't you do this? And then they'll answer, no, it's not this, it's that, you know. We open up the classroom. And then you say, yes, but what happened with the wardrobe, with the coat, and so? By the way, you know, when there is a teacher who wants to keep it closed, he or she can do that, you know. We are not experimenting in the sense that we make situations that maybe are not okay. So it's always flexible in that sense. And you see outside the classrooms, there are lots of places where things can happen, where people can find things, and the idea of Montessori is that you find all the possibilities openly, that you can see, this is maybe something for me, I'm going to do this or this. I, in the Montessori school, have been spending a year on writing an article on something like tramways, you know. And I'm surprised that they let me do that. Yeah? But maybe it helped me. I was not continuing in tramways, but it helped me to develop my thinking. Yeah, that is today. They make corridors for all the coats and the rucksacks. And they make them very wide because they start from the idea that people, that they're always fighting and jumping and bumping, and which is not true, because that's part of the old condition when they had to sit still for 2 hours maybe, and then the bell rang and then they went out. This is not true anymore. And you spend an enormous square meterage on this. And for us, we have not much money, and every square meter should be used for education and not misused in this way. We have a very limited square meterage, and our work is a fight for using every square meter as much as possible. And therefore, for instance, I'm just showing you some things. We developed the idea of a cubicle for coat, and it can be folded and become a thing, and you push it where you want it, you know, because it's mobile, and it's just part of the large space. And then the whole area can be used. Also, for instance, in another school, I made this under the stairs. I made this place. You know, the stairs come up, and it's just a spoiled place underneath. But when you make it 2 steps down, you can't. It's over radiating, so you can't see it quite well. But there's 2 steps, then people can sit here. And I can tell you, in the school, this is the most beloved place. They always want to be there under the stairs, in this sort of place which is just surplus, which is not primary. So we are looking for this sort of places. Actually, in the city, we should do the same thing. For me, every building should be a city. In fact, I'm not an architect. In fact, I'm an urbanist of buildings. I design my buildings in a way you should design a city. I'm afraid that not many cities are designed that way, because cities are always subject of an enormous bureaucracy, and too many people who know too little are saying too much about the city. But we are coming back on that. I found out, I did some very small discoveries. I mean, really very small discoveries. That when you make these steps, and you saw them before, they work in an incredible way. We make them so that you can put things in. Also, you see, you have all a lot of storage in it. But we found out, and that's not experimenting with people, but we found out that people love to work on the ground. not here, just in the middle of nowhere, but when there is some protection around them, but when they feel that you are a little bit protected, and they need enormous space to put their things down, and these tables are always too small, and for the tables, you have these individual tables. They have these measures like this. You can't really work on that. And also, when they work on the ground, they take off their shoes. Especially when you make this in wood, there is a sort of association with tables. You see it here in another school where we made an amphitheater, which is simply considered to be tables, a lot of enormous tables, and they here they are doing a chess play, and when you observe well, they are playing simultaneous chess. Is that education? Not mathematics. Not language, but for me, I think it's education. And you see again, always I see that it is not the photographer that said, "Please take your shoes off and put them there because I want to make a picture." No, this is just natural. This is the way it works. And then I went on and found out that, first of all, I make in most of my schools, almost all of my schools, stairways of at least 10 meters wide. Although you need a stairs of maybe 2 meters, 2.5, I make them 10 meters wide. And they are always everywhere used for all sorts of assemblies. And what is nice, and that's about the story of experiment, I get you in this experiment thing, is that we found out that when you make this, they are inventing reasons for using it. They say, the fact that they have this is starting to be an incentive for things. And I found out that such a place, which is a little deeper for the teachers, is a possibility to keep people together. The simple fact that you have one step up makes that they feel in a natural way belonging together. And this, for me, is a starting point for architecture, because I have the feeling, when you ask me in one word, what is the task of the architect, is making space to keep people together. And I'll try to elaborate that point. Architecture is not to make beautiful objects. I mean, there's nothing wrong with making things beautiful, but beautiful never should be the goal of the thing. I mean, it is part of the professionality that things are beautiful. But this idea we make beautiful objects is I think completely misusing the idea of architecture. In another school, this is a university building, we made so-called study landscapes. And we stepped them up in such a way that it also connects the different floors. And what you see is the articulation into, if you like, classrooms, places where people work together. And in the world, wherever you look today, in libraries or coffee shops or whatever, everywhere you see long tables, big tables where people are sitting together and work, mostly with their laptops, but also without laptops. They're working on tables together. It's quiet. They're not. Sometimes they are chatting, but it is quite interesting the way they are really concentrated. In a school, we made this tables, and I came by with my camera, and I said, "Can you tell me, are you doing a project together?" And they said, "No." What do you mean? Huh? They were all individually working, but felt sort of nice being at the same table. And when they are grown up, you know, it's also nice when you have a nice girl sitting in front of you. Although you are not working together, you can drink coffee afterwards together. You never know what happens. And this whole idea in libraries and everywhere in the world, in my opinion, in the near future, is going to be tables and tables with people sitting and working. Working, really working, really. And also, for that reason, the computer screen is a good thing because it concentrates you, you know. And you can also Skype with it. You can Skype. I have seen, I mean, this is not my generation, but that people are Skyping with people who are sitting just opposite each other. This is fantastic. Huh? So, I mean, I was always organizing in architecture school this sort of teams that were working together on a project. And I, stupid enough, I said, what a pity that with this computer, this doesn't work anymore. And they said, what do you mean? We are all Skyping with each other. And instead of the one dominant say, we should do it like this, we should put a tree there. And this, they are talking with each other by Skype, sitting around the table, and it's even maybe a more democratic way of talking together. I think in big companies, when you have the direction, where they are too old, they can't handle the machines anymore. But it would be better to have this table, everybody with this laptop, and say, I am sorry, but you are wrong. It's better than to say, I'm sure you think you are wrong, you know, because of And so there is a sort of egalitarian thing in that. I started very long ago with making in the middle of a school a sunken sort of pit with stools. You could fill it up with the stools, and then it's just floor. And you can take stools out, and then you have a place where something like, well, 8 people, could be 10, could be 7, sit together. In this case, somebody is reading. That somebody happens to be my wife, who spent her life in being teacher. And, you know, this is the architect, can I say, helping the people to concentrate just one spot. You can do the same thing in the city, you know. I have the potato eaters, not a very beautiful, but for me a very crucial painting as an example. These people are sitting around the table, and I don't know whether they like each other, and they are supposed to be very poor, and they are supposed to eat potatoes and drink coffee. I think sort of American coffee, not espresso. But you see this. There is a table which makes the togetherness, and very important, the lamp, who makes this universe where these people are condemned to each other and form a group. For me, this is the building stone of architecture and also urbanism. You must really think in terms of tables or pits or places where people find each other and where people can do something with each other or just are looking for each other's company. This is in the middle of a school. The school hall is like a sea, and in the sea there is an island, and on this island they are feeling safe in the sense that they feel some protection. Architecture is about giving some protection to people, that people are not lost in space, because then it's no space. And you need very simple, elementary, I want to say, elementary means to do that. This situation was made and photographed 50 years ago, and today it is still there, and it is used for distributing meals, because at this moment the current direction in the school is providing meals. And what I learned from it is that you did not make that block for this or that or such and such, but you made it, and it is in different situations, it is differently used, and all the time, you know, it helps, so to say, to fulfill a situation, if you like, a dream. This is what I call polyvalency, the fact that a form offers to people possibilities, and that the architect does not know beforehand which possibilities it will be. I mean, when you talk about multipurpose, you say a hall is a concert hall, but could also be used for the theater. That's multipurpose. But polyvalency is the fact that it is based on a sort of elementary thing, something which in different cultures, in different times, in different places in the world could do something else. I'll tell you, in case you make a sort of community of housing and you have imagine that you have a small place, a piazza in the middle somewhere, and you put a block on it, or some of them, you'll look what's going to happen. You know, people of different kind, with different ideas, are going to use that thing for different things. And it's not functionalism, because functionalism says this is the function, I'm making the form for that. But it's just, you know, the idea that it gives a little bit of protection and it gives the possibility for outlook. I made also recently in recent schools, this is also something you could make in a place, you know. Just this. Actually, I forgot to take that picture with me, but somewhere in a housing project I made in the 80s in Kassel, there was landing, and I made this landing of the stair, you know, how do you say, huh? Halfway. I enlarged that and made also a sort of place where you can sit, and the women who stay at home the whole day when the men are out to do important things, they were drinking coffee there and smoking cigarettes and talk about their relation problems, and they had some carpet in it and so on. So the moment that you provide elementary things, not saying this is for that, this is to wash your car, this is to etc., but you just provide these things, they work. Like, I mean, this thing in a school, I tell you, this works like mad. And everywhere, this is to open where you can put things in it. And when you come back, you see how the teacher thinks, we have a project. Couldn't we do that project? Or you have the pupils who say, cannot we do it there? And they feel that this sort of minimal, or elementary is the word, conditions to not being completely lost in the space are important. This for me is the heart of the things I'm doing. You see that also in other places people come together, reading, etc. But this they like more. Here is a school in Almere, the way I designed it. What I designed was, I'm not going to explain you plans or so, but this was a sort of open space unit. And what you can't see on the picture, the bad picture, is that here is a sliding panel, so you can close it off a little more. But already, these two sort of hands that are embracing something is an elementary thing you could do in outside, inside, everywhere. And I show you what happened when I came back. I mean, this is not the highest architecture, but it's not bad. I mean, it's just correct. I think it's correct architecture, but it's not made because I think it's so beautiful. I mean, it's not bad. You have this same place at that side. I think it's okay. It's correct. You know, look what happened. Yeah, people are in this place finding a sort of living room, and obviously they have the feeling that they want to be in a sort of safe place. I don't know about their house situation, but they wanted to make a house. And this is what people, so it's not experimenting with people, but it's just provide them with possibilities, and you'll see what they are going to do with it. This is a school in Roma. I just want to show you some projects a little more elaborated. In a neighborhood, an existing neighborhood, new, not bad, not good. In the middle there was an open spot for the school, secondary and primary education. What I did, I developed sort of space units of 2 times 4 classrooms, with the sliding doors and the all the things I showed you before, always around inner courts, and situated along a street. This could be the layout for a neighborhood, you know. One street where everything comes together, and smaller units where people have more, not intimate, but more direct relationship with each other. And you can build it higher for the secondary education. And the idea is just to make it simple. We had no money, and repetition is important, and it's important to have a simple structural idea. I mean, when you see modern architecture, they try to make, you know, acrobatics of all the things that are possible, and I cannot understand where they get the money to do all this. But it's, you know, everywhere, every building is trying to be a ballet dancer in an incredible position. I try to just keep it to basics. So the idea is to make a very simple system of columns, which is repeated over, and where you have beams and a simple, well, simple is not the right word, but you just elementary floor slabs you can buy in any concrete firm. And in this way, to make build the school in such a way that you can also extend it. They asked me at this moment to add more sports facilities. I mean, building in Italy is not really easy. I would not wish my worst enemy to build in Italy. My God, Madonna. This was really difficult. But thank God we managed, and it came there in a reasonable way. You see here the central street where everybody meets each other like in any normal street. So I would say don't make too complex ideas which look interesting on the picture. Looking interesting is already wrong. Never you should head to making things interesting. Just make things the way they are. This is a sort of a sort of central street where everything comes together. And we made a sketch of the inner courts, selling them by the idea that the old Roman houses had also this inner courts, and that worked. And we made this sort of overhanging roofs in order to have places where people can work outside. Oh, they thought that was so strange to work outside. They had never done that in Italy. So the experiment was whether they would go outside or not. And I can confess you one thing. I asked the photographer to say, well, you say they should work outside because the architect wants a photograph of that. And they had never done it. They said, no, but it's dangerous. And they didn't want. Anyway, they did it. And now, thanks to the photographer, they found out how nice it is to also work outside. So that's the type of experiments I try to do. There they work, they have some shadow, and they found out that this is possible. And this is your poster. Outside there is a lot of space around the building with the second floor overlapping, and this is giving a lot of outside space where they are doing all sorts of things. And inside, this is the stairs of 10 meter wide, and every time I come there, there's something happening. They have lessons. One of the teachers drama, so says, "Let's go there," and he or she is trying to do things, and you know, the most fantastic things happen. They are incited by the architecture. The architecture is inviting. It's just there are things, elementary things, and the people think, "Hey, why shouldn't we use that in this or that way?" This is my way of thinking. You know. Anyway, these stairs are also continuing in the outside space. And what is very nice in this school is that it is deeper. There was bad soil in it, and it would cost a fortune to fill it up with new sand, and I said, no, don't do that. Keep it the way it is. You know, the most architects want to make their buildings like this. You know what I mean. Huh? This is what architects want. Huh? The Acropolis, the Parthenon, that's the holy thing, you know. If I only could make this sort of thing. And it is all based on the idea that the thing is standing there as an object to be celebrated. And what I try to do is exactly the opposite. And when you sit on the stairs here, what many tourists are sitting all on the stairs, they're looking out. And I must say that there's a lot to be seen in Athens when you look out. Yeah? But they are, in fact, turning their back to the building. Whereas in our situation, you make a big place where you are, so to say, protected as one big family. So I would promote to say, why don't we make our buildings much more in a deeper place instead of on a plinth. So the opposite of what most architects are doing. And we made this stairs so that you can sit, that you have the walking parts and sitting places. This is not expensive. They did that, you know, as a sort of outside material. Think of that in a city somewhere in my place, you know. I made this quarter with one big street in the middle. You must have one street, one central street, and then maybe next to that central street there should be a sort of piazza, and that piazza should be sunken so that people unintentionally they are going to sit there and something is going to happen. I tell you, I guarantee you, there's no experiment necessary. I guarantee you something is going to happen. And this is going to happen. People find the possibility to do, I don't know what they're doing here, but this is, for me, secondary. Primary for me is that the architecture, what architecture? Just the simple conditions, this elementary conditions make that people are going to see each other, people are going to gather. Yeah? This is a school for secondary education in Amsterdam, and you see in the middle there is a big open space, a big void space. I mean, the fire department hated the building, but by making this outside balconies, we had a escape way to the outside instead of the inside. So, I mean, the big fights you always have with the fire department. You know that the Centre Beaubourg in Paris, that it was signed, what is Soussigné, by Renzo Piano, Rogers, and the fire brigade. What we did was make the levels split levels. And what happened is that you have not slices of building. All buildings are slices. You are in slice number such or in slice number so. And I have lived in the University of Delft. I don't know how many years on top of somebody else I met in the restaurant, but I didn't realize that he was just under me. We could have drilled a hole in the floor and communicate. I mean, you have no connection with the others, and when you break it open and make it in such a way, every part is connected. It's a simple means. I mean, it's almost a trick, a simple trick to make the building more communal, open. And in the middle, the stairs we made in such a way that also here is a sort of place where people see each other. The stairs I showed you before in the school we made in Amsterdam in 1983 had already this idea of split level. And we found out that people waiting just for some teacher that came too late or for whatever reason were sitting there, and then somebody from a classroom came out of the door and came in this situation like I am here and started to perform him or herself. You know, the architecture, if you insist on calling it architecture, incites the behavior of the people in I think in the right way. This is the two schools that are not similar but related, built from the same grammar and the same vocabulary. In the school I was talking about, here you see the scheme of what I was saying, always trying to find relationships from parts one to another. And in the middle, there is a staircase, a big staircase, a staircase which is not acknowledged by the fire brigade. They want, in the corner, closed staircases like everywhere in the world. We made in the middle an extra open staircase and made it in such a way that not the flights are on top of each other, but the flights are in a way that you could see the nice girl which is walking there, because it is a misunderstanding that people on secondary schools are going there for mathematics and for language. They just go there for boys and girls, and if you don't know that, think about it. This is why you go to the secondary school, even when you don't realize it yourself. So it's very important that you see and have contact with each other, and you see what there is, what there is on the floor. Everybody wants to see what there is, you know. And this is a sort of how do you say it? It reminds me from my own old school, and it's not an experiment. It just works without experimenting. So I think an architect should be more aware of this sort of things. And we jump into the city. For me, the school should be a city. Every building I'm inclined to design as a city. It is not true that a city is a building. City is the general elementary thing and not building. And in the city, expose itself, should show what there is. I must make a tribute to Peter Pracknell, who is not in this room, but he is quite near. I met him at Columbia University in New York in the 60th, and he was giving as an assignment for first year students the way from your house to the school, and all these students were to describe, photograph, explain what happened to them, what the experience was of the way to the school. This feeds back to the same Jane Jacobs, who's saying that you should not make streets too long, but make smaller units so that you can take another way. It's very important when you go to school every day that you have an endless a variety of possibilities how to walk. She was thinking of the same things. You have to explore, you have to be able to explore the world. And Aldo van Eyck was saying and teaching that, to say it just very quickly, that the city should be designed for children. When the city is designed for children, it also works for grown-ups. When the city is designed for grown-ups, it does not work for children, and it spoils, to say it in a rude way, the younger generation. I mean, it is not only luxury things, but they made in front of the Rijksmuseum this pond. It never has been there, but it came up, and it reminded me of all these beautiful ponds I have seen in Paris, in the Tuileries, where always people came together. And the nice thing is that in winter, it's even when it's not freezing, they artificially freeze it, and the same or other people come here to skate. We had a very soft winter, no skating, and the Dutch love skating and are very good in it because they did it from their youth, when they were very young, and this winter we couldn't skate. And they have frozen this place, and all of a sudden they all came with the fantastic skates and trying to practice on this small pond. It's very important to have that. I just come from Chicago and I've seen the Kapoor, what is it, mirror thing. It's a sculpture. It cost a fortune, but I was before I thought, well, Kapoor, you know, he makes these things everywhere, and a lot of rich men stories, but I was lost when I saw that thing, you know. It was so unbelievable how many people were, just to say it bluntly, as he made people happy just before for the photographs and the invention the people found to make to put like this, and then got a photograph, and it's unbelievable. Every photograph you take is different. I think this is sort of making experiences possible in the city. But if you have not so much money, you can also do it simple. This is a photograph in New York City in the 60th, together with Peter Pracknell. One of his students took it as an example of what people, what experience people had in the city opening a fire plug. Huh? All these fire plugs you have, and they were able, they had some sort of thing to open it. It was very hot, and this for me is an iconic photograph. Aldo van Eyck made all these playgrounds. I could easily, and I would love to do this, make a whole lecture on the playgrounds Aldo van Eyck made. He was really a master for the playgrounds he made on leftover places in the city. He made simple elements like sand pits and some benches where the parents could also meet, and we see it in our park in Amsterdam, that the parents are discussing with each other and talking, just because their kids are in the sandpit. So it's not just for the kids; it's for everybody, and this. Maybe this was my school, the very elementary things Aldo van Eyck did in the city. It's unbelievable what happened, you know. Today they would say it's unsafe, somebody can fall down. Today they make the cities so safe that you get very dangerous situations, because the people don't learn how to defend themselves to the world. The world must be dangerous in a way. You must not say, oh, these poor kids, they can fall when they do this. First place, they never fall. Well, they fall, and then they feel, and they know what till what point they can go. We used to have a stove in the room. And our children, at a certain moment, were touching the stove. And you could say, oh, you're burning your fingers. First, they said, okay, let him go there. We'll never do it again. Yeah? Understood from the world also the dangerous situations. This is NL architects, younger architects, and they made fantastic things. They were asked to make a cafe and an extension of a bookshop. And when the man, I was meeting this architect, and they say, how are you going? Yes, I have a commission to extend a bookshop and a cafe, but I'm going to make a basketball field on top. I thought, what are you doing? Basketball field on top of the thing? This is a fantastic success. I mean, his commission is in the dark, their own photograph, you know. And from all parts of the city, people come up here by bus, because it's the only place where they are free. It's open, they're free, they can play their basketball. And it's really moving to see when the bus stops here and people come out and say, is it free? Yeah, it's free, go on! And that they start to play on it. I mean, this is really what is missing in architecture. Architecture is thinking of a beautiful roof or something. The only roof you can make, in fact, is making a basketball field or something of that kind, of maybe a garden or whatever. And also, architecture is so is distant. The word in architecture is distant, and we should bring it more nearby. And a building, you should be able to touch buildings and have a direct relationship with buildings, and not always this distance. Oh, how beautiful is this? Huh? And I think they did it, the same NL architects, by making their buildings symbolically, so to say, touchable, and begaanbaar. What is begaanbaar in English? Accessible. Well, yeah, accessible. This is a photograph, a famous photograph of Paris, where you see how this shaft, ventilation shaft of the metro, is openly exposed. It's a symbolic photograph because you have to go outside of the official road. You have to step, so to say, in the. What is it? I'm getting tired. It's a step into the anyway, out of the official world, and there you find the place where you have this train, and you have the smell, and you have the heat of the train coming out, and this is where the people gather. This, for me, is a photograph of the city as a school. And a school not in the sense of where you learn mathematics and languages. By the way, you learn a lot of languages in the street, but in another way. And I think this is very beautiful. This is a photograph I took when my children were very small and we were on our way in France, and they could step out to just move. We observed that they immediately got the handrail to do their, so to say, exercises. And so when you make a handrail in a city, think of the children that will use it to do their exercises. This is a famous photograph in New York, which is actually saying in a beautiful way exactly the same. Make the city accessible, if accessible is the right word. Make the world accessible so that children and in first place children, but we are all children at a certain moment, can have experiences. This is the most elementary, almost stupid thing in the street we had. They had put this concrete blocks of something like this. Well, you'll see it. Just to keep the cars from the sidewalk. In case you want to keep your cars from the sidewalk, make things that you can handle as pieces of art, and where you really can see. So many of these objects are just a funny old-fashioned poles and things like that. Make them so that you at least can sit on them, because sitting to accommodate is one of the most beautiful English words I know. When you look it up in the dictionary, you find all the significances of architecture. Make things so that they accommodate. As long as it accommodates, that will be the title of my last book, maybe. Yeah, as long as it accommodates, and you know, somebody used it in a way nobody was thinking of, and I think this is sort of moving how you, with just one concrete cube in the city, you can do something, and it's also quite beautiful. When I make columns, I always make. I mean, they cost not much. I ask my contractor, please do that for me. Come on, and he makes that, and it's just accommodating for people. It's not just I like a column, but it's just this beginning, and I thought I would get a picture now. Oh, I'm completely wrong. I thought I would find a picture, but I forgot this picture, of the columns of Bernini in the San Pietro, Piazza San Pietro. And there you have also this, you have seen it, the places where mostly ladies are sitting and talking. And there I thought, wait a moment, this is something. I did not invent anything myself. I just have reasonable eyes to see what happened in the history of architecture. And I am going to explore that. This is a picture of which I talked already. This is the Library of Columbia University in New York, and it is meant to put the knowledge on a higher level, so that people have the feeling they have to respect. Respect is okay, but they have to walk up, even when they are handicapped, to get to the knowledge. And when I was there, there was a sort of students' revolution. It was in 1968, I think. And I found out that people turning their back to the knowledge use this as a grandstand. This for me was an important moment. I use this picture in all my lectures because I think it is explaining how formal architecture, by the way the people use it, also can be the opposite and can become very informal and very helpful to people. So I think this is the city in its best guise. Also museums. I mean, we should make completely different kind of museums. I'm very, very touched by this this image of this lady who's learning these children about art. We should have a whole lecture on that thing, in what way art should be integrated. Well, Kapoor. And for me, the Guggenheim Museum is an example of the building as a city. You come in and you are in this open space and you oversee all the beautiful things they have, all the beautiful girls that are walking, everything in a glance. And, you know, it makes the idea of going to a museum, not getting from one room to another room and then a room here and then you forgot, oh, there's also a room there and I couldn't find it. And where are the Rembrandts? Oh, I missed them. They were there, you know. And here it is just openly. A city and a building, we should try to make them comprehensive, open, accessible is the word again. And this is one of my favorite places, the Manhattan, the Rockefeller Center. That we have been there again just after more than, well, 50 years, I think. And it was exactly the same. After 50 years, the same people who try to skate, they still cannot do it, but there's still thousands of people around. And what do they see? There's nothing special to be seen, but the feeling that in this big metropolis you are sort of doing the same thing, you know, is I got there for the first time in Manhattan, a feeling of togetherness. Even not being an American, even be a tourist, even tourists together have all of a sudden the feeling of coming home. Coming home is in fact what Aldo van Eyck always mentioned as the main purpose of architecture. I would say coming home is a little bit confusing because then you think of a front door you close behind you, but coming home also could mean that you feel at ease, that you feel protected, that you feel that you are part of a larger whole, and that you are. And I think that is what we should do. The school is not just to learn mathematics and languages, but in first place is to learn how to get along with each other, and negotiating, consolating. That you feel that you are not alone, that you are helping others, that you understand in what way you get along with each other. That is that is what is the big problem of a city, and I think architects and urbanists can contribute to that. I mean, it's funny to show this sandpit, which actually is doing exactly the same, although in a very small scale. By accident, I found out that when you make a sandpit, you don't need to make a very big sandpit. That it's better to make compartments where people have that feeling of, you know, have you ever seen in a sandpit people doing sunbathing? You are always afraid that they walk over you. Yeah? So by making this sort of small walls, people feel that they can lie down without danger. This is my last picture, actually, because I could go on, but this is a small hill town in Italy, and this is architecture without architects, but it's striking how a little place where something like in the Rockefeller Plaza is something unimportant is going on. You cannot say that it's the special championship of basketball where the whole world is looking at. It's just something important, unimportant, but the fact that all these people here are looking is the feeling they get of togetherness. And what is so nice is that the architect, the non-existing architect, maybe it was a sort of urbanist, I don't know, was making all these conditions here without making official grandstands, but just the way it is made is so that people feel at home, that people can be part of the experience, and in short, it's accommodating people. Thank you very much.
Mr. Hasberger, for this very inspiring lecture. Can we take a few minutes to answer a few questions from the audience very briefly?
Are there sure.
A few questions? There is another microphone here. If you don't have the mic, you must speak up very clearly, please, so you are understood not just by the lecturer, but by the rest of the room.
You don't need to have questions. And if you want to ask a question just nearby, more, I wouldn't say intimate, but more just private, then
we can do
it's
that
also too. Possible. You don't need to make your question in this public situation.
Okay. I think this was a very long and rich lecture. We will definitely not experiment whatever we do in a school in Griffintown. We'll try to somehow do new things that work well and use the potential that the children will bring to us. But in any case, I think maybe we'll leave it here. I thank all of you for coming. Merci à tous d'être venus ce soir. I want to thank Mr. Hasberger and Mrs. Hasberger for making the long trip to Montreal, and to thank the Gewurzes again. I'd like to thank Eleni also, Tay, for helping to organize, and Anand Sud, who helped a lot at the School of Urban Planning to make this possible. So, merci à tous, bonne soirée, et à bientôt.